Welcome to the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. It's March 18, 2013, and this is episode 364. Most of you already know that I'm not really much of a street photographer. I dabble in it, I enjoy it, but I've not really, it's definitely not one of my stronger genres. So having spoken recently with my fellow TWIP This Week in Photo co-host Valerie Jardin, I thought it would be nice if we could sit down, have a chat, and walk you through some of her beautiful street photography and intermingle some tips and techniques and some of the thoughts behind the images. So that's what we're going to do today. We've got an hour or so's wonderful chat with Valerie, so I hope you enjoy this. I certainly did, and I learned a lot, and it also has inspired me. I think I'm going to be throwing my camera over my shoulder a little bit more now as I walk out into the streets of Tokyo, because I certainly don't do enough street photography here on my doorstep. So let's jump into it and listen to our conversation with Valerie Jardin. So I'm really happy to be joined this morning by Valerie Jardin, and we're going to have a great chat about street photography and really introduce something that I don't do a lot of myself. So welcome to the show, Valerie.
Thank you, Martin. I'm so excited to be on your show finally, because I listen to it all the time.
Well, that's great. I'm really, really pleased that you were able to join me. You know, obviously, listeners that also listen to TWIP This Week in Photo will know that we've co-hosted that together a number of times. And so, you know, we're good friends anyway.
Yes.
Give us a chance here to talk about something that I don't talk about a lot on this podcast. So I'm looking
That's
forward
great.
To this.
Yeah.
So Valerie, let's jump straight in. And can you tell us how you got into photography initially? You know, where did it all start?
Well, it actually started late in life, not like some people who say, oh, I picked up my first camera when I was 8. That was not my case. I moved to the States. I'm from France, and I'm actually a French citizen. I'm a resident of the United States. And when I moved here, I didn't even have a camera. I mean, I had a point and shoot and didn't really take a whole lot of pictures with it. And about 15 years ago, I was inspired to do actually landscape photography. And after seeing the work of National Geographic Jim Brandenburg, who is a Minnesotan, and after seeing his work, going to his gallery, I thought, I think I want to get into this. And I got a DSLR, and at the time it was film. And I started shooting mostly landscape and nature. I wanted to be a wildlife photographer. Well, with kids, that's a hard thing to get into when they're in tow all the time. So my wildlife photography dreams were soon gone. And I started doing kids' portraits, basically, for my friends. And one thing led to another, I started a business of mostly doing candid children portraits. And one thing led to another, I then did mostly commercial work for interior photography, architecture, and food photography. So it was kind of a long stretch, but it didn't happen overnight either. And in the meantime, I started traveling back home a lot and starting doing a lot of street photography. And I did that for years, not thinking that's something I could just do in my own town here. I thought, you know, you do street photography when you travel, but I never thought of it as something you could do here in your own town, in your own backyard. And so that's how I got interested in street photography. And I got inspired by some of the great street photographers, whether it's Doisneau or Cartier-Bresson, and started doing a lot of black and white. Then one thing led to another. I started writing about it and teaching about it. And now what I mostly do is teach workshops and write about photography. And my workshops are not all about street photography, but it's a big component, introducing street photography among other things.
So what other stuff do you do on your workshops? I imagine that there's a food aspect, you know, you're traveling quite a lot. What sort of stuff do you get up to?
Well, the weekend workshop, I do weekend workshops and I do week-long workshops. The week-long workshops that are mostly in France are an introduction to street photography and how to incorporate people in your frame when you travel. And also how to see outside the postcard and how to photograph iconic landmarks differently. Like, you know, if we're shooting the Eiffel Tower, well, everybody has a picture of the Eiffel Tower that looks like a postcard, but is that really exciting? Not really. And so it's teaching people to look at a city and make their own iconic images. And that's often through including people.
Yeah,
I'm really big on that. I think people are the soul of a place, and having travel photos without the people, you're missing a major component. And it's also about telling a story, and all those little detail shots that will make a wonderful travel book after your trip. So we do some travel food photography, an introduction to travel food photography, how to actually shoot decent images of your food when you're sitting in a restaurant with natural light, using simple reflectors and natural window light, for example. So we touch on a lot of things that are not just street photography, but street photography being my passion, that's a big part of it.
I see. It sounds great. And so before we move on, I'll remind the listeners, you know, this is episode 364, and that means that you can get to all of the links and the photos that we're going to be looking at shortly with the short link mbp.ac/364. And so, you know, I'll put links to everything that we're talking about here into these show notes. And you'll be able to listen to the podcast there, but you're already doing that if you're listening to this. So basically, you know, go over there to check out the images. Valerie's provided us with 10 beautiful and very large, sort of, even on a large monitor, you'll be able to see lots of detail in these images if you click on them. So go over to mbp.ac/364 to check all of that out as you listen. Once you've got started, you've bought yourself a camera, you've started to do the street photography, I'm sure that there's a lot of stuff that jumps, you know, like, I mean, I get very, once I start, I'm okay, but I get quite anxious with street photography, you know, and I know that it's not always necessary to go up and ask permission, and sometimes if you do, it's a totally different image, but Do you get very anxious when you're out? Do you normally ask for permission, or, you know, how does that all work?
Well, not really, because that totally ruins the moment if you're doing candid street photography. And I'm always nervous, and I think that's the adrenaline rush that keeps you you know, wanting to do more, and it's very addicting. I used to hide behind a 200 millimeter lens. You know, don't get me wrong, I didn't start shooting 3 feet from people right away. I was very, very nervous. My first street shots were from a distance. And then I realized that wasn't the look I was looking for. I wanted to be close. I wanted to be right there. And so I started shooting with shorter and shorter lenses. And now, actually, my favorite lens, I still shoot with a DSLR because I just know my camera so well, and I shoot with a 5D Mark II, that I know I will eventually go to a smaller system like a Micro Four Thirds, but right now I can change all the settings without looking, without even, and it's so comfortable that I put the pancake 40 millimeter pancake lens on my Canon, and it makes it a pretty small camera overall. And that's pretty much all I shoot now. And I love it. It's a sharp little lens. And it's very inconspicuous, and you have to get close. I mean, with a 40, you have to get pretty close. I don't want to be in your face either. I think you'll see my style of street photography. I'm not in your face, and that's okay. I think that your style of street photography reflects your personality. But I like to be close. And so yes, you're always nervous. But I'm not nervous of getting caught, and I don't shoot. I only take one or two frames. I'm very respectful, and you only have one shot anyways. That instant is only going to last. That gesture, that expression is only going to last one shot. And so you have to be able to anticipate the moment, to get that right gesture, that right expression. And without getting quote unquote caught. That said, I'm okay if people see me after the fact, and I'm completely ready to answer their questions if they have questions. I'm not going to run away. And I think that's the worst thing you can do, is just get the shot and get out, because you're not doing anything wrong. You're in a public place. You're taking photographs of strangers in the streets. In most countries, that's completely legal. But I do ask permission to do a street portrait, which is a completely different thing. And we'll see in the sample images, a street portrait, there is an interaction with your subject. So it's still candid in the way that you don't know the person. Something attracted you to them, whether they have a really cool hat or a beautiful smile. And I usually just approach them. For me, that was much more difficult. For some people, it's easier because then they have permission. For me, it was much more difficult, and it took me years to go from shooting only candid to going back and forth and shooting both whenever I wanted to on a photo walk, and actually asking permission to make a portrait of a stranger by just telling them, "Wow, you have a beautiful smile. I would really like to take a picture." And people usually are okay. I mean, I would love it if somebody told me, "I have a beautiful smile. Can I take your picture?" Yeah. It's a compliment.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, yeah.
So you touched on there. We might as well. I wanted to ask the question you touched on. There's only really one shot, and that instantly reminded me of, I guess, your fellow countryman, Henri Cartier-Bresson. So he talked about the decisive moment, right? Is that what it's all about to you? Do you think that's there is just one moment?
I think so, and I think that's what he meant by it. And a lot of photographers have interpreted the decisive moment different ways. To me, it really means the anticipation of that one instant where you're going to get the shot, and it's only going to, you're only going to have one shot, and it's that expression, it's that gesture that's going to tell a story. And he was very good at that. And I think you can train yourself to anticipate for that. And you have to be patient in some cases. Sometimes it happens as you're walking down the street and something catches your attention and something is going to happen. You always have to be ready. You can't just start, taking off your lens cap. I mean, you have to be ready to shoot. Your camera can't be in the bag. There's no lens cap. It has to be on and on a setting that you feel pretty comfortable is going to get the shot. You only get one shot. I really believe I usually don't get two of the right gesture. And I don't machine gun it either. I don't just shoot, thinking I'm going to get the shot, because I find that I'm close to my subject, so that's going to draw a lot of attention, and I don't want to draw attention. And so I prefer to anticipate and try to get the one shot or two, rather than just shoot, thinking, okay, one of them is going to be good, because that attracts attention. That's kind of disrespectful in a way.
So didn't Bresson do the, I'm just recalling this now, but I kind of can recall seeing some of his contact sheets where he actually, he obviously, there was only one moment where he said, "This is the one, this is the shot." But he did sort of work his way into a scene, and he would sometimes, and unless I'm mistaken, but I'm pretty sure it was Cartier-Bresson that, on looking at his contact sheets, he did sort of work in, and you could see him moving towards the subject, and then he'd maybe you know, he wouldn't have a whole load of frames, and he certainly wouldn't be machine gunning, but he did seem to work in a little bit. Do you do that? Will you walk? You
know, I'll get as close as I can, and sometime you don't know how much, you don't know how close you're going to be able to get. So I actually use the viewfinder. So I actually do have the camera right in front of my eye. Mm. I don't shoot from the waist or anything. I like to frame in the viewfinder. Mm. So I usually get closer and closer and try not to attract attention. So you do shoot a few frames before you get close enough.
Yeah, I see.
And then you know when you get the shot. You know that moment
that's going to be moment. Right.
Exactly. And that, to me, that's what I think he meant.
Yeah.
And if I think a street photographer, you learn to know the right moment, and you know it's in there, you know it's in the can when it is. Mm. And you're so excited, and you get that rush.
Yeah.
And you hope that it's sharp.
Yeah.
And it's in focus.
Yeah.
And I get excited every time. Some people, like I was just in DC last weekend, and I was texting a friend, said, "Oh, I think I got a few good shots." And said, "Oh, well, yeah, big surprise." I'm like, "No, but I get more excited now about it than I did actually 10 years ago." Mm. It's the more I shoot street photography, the more I enjoy it, and the more I get the thrill, I think.
Well, with that, let's jump in and start to look at some of your beautiful images. You've sent me 10 photographs. They're all in the blog post at mbp.ac/364, or the Enhanced podcast, if that's what you subscribe to. They'll be on your phone or your iPad and everything at the moment. So we'll go through these one at a time. Let's talk about this first one of the couple at the side of the river. Where is it? And, you know, how did you shoot it, etc.?
Oh, that was in Paris summer or two ago. I was actually working on a love project for an exhibit, and well, I live in the Midwest in the U.S., so you don't have a whole lot of public display of affection. Mm. So you go to Europe, and especially Paris, and it's like overload. Yeah. You have all those people and lovers. So I was walking along the riverbank, and it was sunset, so the light was just beautiful. Mm. And I was with my family. I mean, this wasn't like I was on a family trip that summer. Mm. And I saw those lovers, and we took a break, and I got closer and closer and closer. They had no clue I was there. They were obviously busy, you know, loving each other. And so that was a pretty easy approach, I would say. But I don't think the picture would have been as nearly as good if they had been from the front. I think it just works well. There is the light. You can tell it's a low light. The yeah. sun is setting, and just to see a little bit of their face, I think it works. You don't always have to see the face.
Yeah, I get this with wildlife as well. You know, some people love to see the eyes, but often, you know, the expression where they're looking down, you can hardly even see their face, never mind their eyes. It can sometimes work very, very well. And I agree, it's like that in here.
But there's a mood, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and it's like you say, you can tell that even though it's a black and white, you don't see the warm tones, but you can see the angle of the light coming in from the side on the bag and on his arm. And it just, you instantly can tell that without really, you know, without seeing the color, that it's a sunset. So, but it works very well. I love this shot. You know, obviously I knew before I asked that it was Paris, not because you told me, but because it's just very Parisian. You can yes. feel it. So is that sense of place important to you in your street photography?
It is. And I think it's because I teach travel photography in my workshop, and I think it's important when people are in Paris. If they shoot street photography, it shoots, say, Paris. Mm. And so I like to have some of the background. And that's important when you I was just walking. So there are several approaches of street photography. Mm. If you don't mind me getting into this a little bit, there are several approaches. You can either walk the street and look for a trigger. Mm. And this was a trigger. I was actually just walking down, not looking for anything in particular, but I was really in tune with my theme of love. So whenever I saw people kissing or holding each other, I would instantly try to get a shot. Mm-hmm. So that's more walking and looking for a trigger. There is another way of, and which I really enjoy, is to find a stage, and that works really well in travel photography, is to find a stage in front of a landmark or a building with some interesting architecture. And then you wait for the right people and for the story to unfold. And so that takes a little bit of patience, but it's a lot of fun too. So those are two approaches that that I use. Mostly I don't shoot from the hip or from the chest. Just I don't feel comfortable, and I feel it's, to me, it feels a little sneaky. And I'm okay with explaining why I'm doing this if somebody wants to know why I'm taking a picture of them. So I don't see any reason to frame it wrong or having it crooked just because I'm trying to shoot it from the hip without being able to see what's going on in the frame. So I don't do that approach, but a lot of street photographers do it and do it well and have great result. That's just not what I do. But so,
yeah. So, you know, we've got 10 photos. I'm going to go through these relatively quickly.
Sure.
So let's move on to the next one. And this is, I'm looking at a beautiful, it looks like a Dalmatian, but I imagine it's a Great Dane.
It's a Great Dane, which is, you know, in a big city like Paris is always unusual. And same thing, that was I was walking down the street and that was a trigger, the dog. And then I started looking at what else was going on. And there are several stories here. Who does the dog belong to? Is it the guy who has the paper in his hand? What is he talking to with the other guy? And there are people having a drink at the cafe. And so it's all about the story and then letting the imagination go wild and say, okay, you know, what's going on? And I like this picture because there are so many different scenarios.
There's the two guys talking. One, it looks like he's asking directions or something. And then you've got the people outside of the cafe, like you say. And the dog here, I love the fact that you've got this diagonal line, talking compositionally, you've got this diagonal line coming down from the middle of the left side, leading you out the bottom right corner. But the dog's vision, his line of sight, he's aiming just slightly off to the right of that, but still into the bottom right. And then if the listeners take a look at this, the sun is coming down the street at the same angle, so all of the shadows are leading that way. It's sort of the shot, although it makes my eye wants to go up and around and look at the all of the left side and then the center and all of that, but then all of the line of sight and the shadows lead me out the bottom right corner, and then I'll go down there and I'll start to think to myself, okay, so what was there? What was the dog looking at?
Exactly. It's funny. It does the same thing to me. You kind of want to move it to see what's happening further down the street.
And that's definitely not. I'm not in no way a criticism, because you know I'm not saying, you know, you probably get some people on the web that would sit there in their basements and tell you that you should have included what the dog was looking at and all of that. but it's not the case. You know, I mean, I think just talking, giving people enough information for them to start to invent the rest of the story is great. You know, so it's beautiful the way you've done this.
And I think that's part of the fun too. I've always wanted to know what people's life were all about. You know, I, as a kid, even in the street, I always wondered, oh, I wonder what those people do. And I think that's why I'm so interested in street photography. It's the mystery part that interests me, and never knowing what's going to be around the next corner. And there is always a story. There is always a story. It doesn't matter if you're in your own little town and you photograph and you walk down the same street every day. Every day there's going to be a new story unfolding, and you just have to learn to see it. And if people take the time, it's like a treasure hunt. It's very exciting.
And I think that's one of the big things with me and my photography. And although, you know, I'm very happy with my photography, I'm always wanting to improve, but I'm happy with my photography and the stuff that I concentrate on. But I've never really been a great street photographer at all. And although I've done a bit and I enjoy it, I just don't for me, Tokyo, although, you know, I wasn't born here, but it's so much like home that I often just don't feel as though I even want to point a camera at it. And I know that I'm wasting opportunities in doing that, because for most people it's exotic, it's totally different. But I think that there's part of it is that, you know, your own hometown. People generally start to take it for granted. So if you start to do this sort of stuff, and I'm feeling as though I should do more. Maybe I'll go and buy one of those 40mm lenses and just slap it on the 5D, take the battery grip off. And, you know, a smaller camera and just throw it out. Because I do carry a camera pretty much everywhere I go, but I don't try to get shots. But I know that there's a lot more out there that I should probably be capitalizing on. I don't know. Maybe it's just because it doesn't interest me as much as the rest of the stuff. And so far, I've just prioritized my photography time to do the nature and wildlife. And that's fine. But, you know, looking at this work, it makes me want to do more street photography.
And sometimes getting outside of your comfort zone is a good thing. And for a lot of people who've never tried street photography, and when I teach my weekend workshops, and I was just in San Diego 2 weeks ago on a weekend workshop, and one of the component of the workshop was an introduction to street photography. For several of them, it was something they had never done. Mm. And we went to a busy market right away, because that's a good way to get started.
Yeah.
You know, go to a busy place, nobody's going to notice you, or even start photographing street performers. I know a lot of street photographers said, that doesn't count. Well, it's a good way to get your feet wet. Mm. And to get over the fear of photographing strangers.
Yeah.
So it's okay. Just have a few coins and drop a few coins or dollar bills in their basket. Mm. But take your time to do a nice street portrait.
Yeah.
And then from there, you'll get over the fear, and I always guarantee them that they'll get completely hooked.
Yeah.
Because once you start, you just want to do more.
Yeah.
And it's fun.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I'm going to move on to the next image here now. And this is a striking image as well. You know, I'm looking at a couple in a restaurant or cafe, I guess a restaurant. We've got menus here either side. And, you know, because you've provided us with such nice big images, I can read the menus.
Well,
I don't understand them, but I can read them.
And that was also in Paris. And that's a typical example of finding a stage and waiting for the story to unfold. Excuse me. And waiting for the right people to sit. In Paris, the cafes, a lot of the cafes open completely. Like you can see the windows are open. So it takes care of the reflection, which is really great. And there I was actually staying in I had rented an apartment right across the street. So I had an advantage that I could kind of keep an eye on what was going on in the bistro across the street.
Mm.
And then I would come down regularly and spend 20 minutes, about, I would say, 10 meters from that table, just across a really, really narrow street.
Mm.
And then I saw this couple and I thought, oh, well, there's something about them that totally appealed to me. They were engaged and in a conversation. And then I like the fact that there is a sense of place because of the menu, which can be distracting, but here it's not really big writing because your eyes will automatically go to the writing in a photograph. But here it's not so distracting, but it gives a nice sense of place, which works really well in travel street photography.
Mm.
So I set the stage and I just waited. And I shot this with a 50mm lens. That was before I got my 40.
Mm.
And I spent all week shooting with that 50.
Mm.
And it was comfortable, very light. And then you learn, you know exactly where you need to stand to get that frame.
Yeah.
So you don't mess with zooming in and out. And once you used to that fixed focal length lens, you're more efficient. And I think you can get the shot right away.
Yeah. So I noticed that you included the lady in the background at the on the left of the frame.
Yeah.
That was intentional, right?
Well, probably not at the time. I was really focused on the couple. Mm. But, sometimes you discover things. That's what's fun about street photography. Mm. Something that was happening in the background that you didn't notice when you were shooting. They're going to make or break the picture, actually. Sometimes you're like, oh, shoot, I didn't see that. And look, they have an antenna growing out of their ear or, yeah. So it's important. I make sure I scan the frame of my before I take the shot. I really do a quick look around to see if there is nothing distracting. Mm. And you can always crop it out. I really try to crop in camera and just exclude distracting elements before I take the shot, because I think it's much easier and I hate spending more than 5 seconds in the on each picture on Lightroom. I try to get it right in camera so I don't do much cropping. But with a large sensor, I can always crop a little bit. So that's kind of, but yeah, she works well. I kept her in the frame because she's okay there.
So the other thing as well, obviously once you and my eyes here initially go to the couple and then I'll take a whiz around and look at the menus. And then I went over to the lady in the back there on the left. But then she sort of leads me into the cafe. But then my eye goes through and sort of wants to go around that left menu. And then for some reason at that point, I see all of the probably ink paintings or photographs on the wall look like Charlie Chaplin photos or something.
Yeah.
And they're quite striking as well, but they don't, surprisingly, they don't sort of really scream out at me initially. It's the couple that are talking and the few people behind them that hit me first. So,
and I think they had gray hair, so that, that's light in a really dark environment. And I think that totally attracts your attention. And that's usually I don't always do black and white. Sometimes the color will be the subject, but black and white to me has a timeless quality. And also it will get rid of some distracting elements, because the color is definitely the element that will draw your eye in an image.
Yeah.
And sometime in a busy scene like this, something really bright will draw your eye and distract from the main subject. So that's another reason why black and white works well.
I guess like that post in the foreground, if that was bright red, then that would annoy the hell out of me. But with it being just another gray tone, it blends in quite well, and it just shows me that it's a street. It doesn't become an annoyance at all.
And some people would say, why didn't you take that out? I just don't. Yeah. I have the photojournalist approach.
Yeah.
It's there. I keep it there. It was there in the first place. It's not bugging me.
Nah,
and
that's
I
great.
Like to keep it.
Okay, let's move on to the next one. So I'm looking at a small person. He's a supporting element, but I imagine it's more about the lines and the structure of the architecture. Is that right?
Yes, actually, I shot this 2 days ago in Washington D.C. I don't know why I love this picture. It's probably because it's fresh, and it was a fun instant, because I ended up talking to the guy afterwards, and he was just wondering why I was so intent on keeping him in my frame. He wanted to move. I said, no, you just add a sense of scale. This is one of the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C., which is a giant building, and it's so, has those sobering, it's kind of that strict, and those lines are, it would have been better with a wide angle lens. I was just shooting with the 40, and I really wanted him to be very small at the bottom. So I was literally on the ground trying to get a really low angle. And I took a couple shots, and then he saw me and we started talking from a distance, because I'm pretty far there. And I said, no, this works really well and nobody will know it's you.
Yeah.
But you add a nice sense of scale to the image. Without you, there is nothing, and I need you there. And so it was kind of fun, because he thought, oh, I had never thought of that, and I like it. It just, because those gigantic buildings, and they're so impressive, and then he looks so small. I just wish I had a wider angle lens. But then if I had one with me, by the time I would have switched the lens, there would have been no shot. Mm. So I never regret. I leave the house with one lens only on my camera, and I never say, oh, I wish I had that other lens, because I'll just I'll use what I have that day.
Yeah. Well, it works well. I mean, and I like the lines at the bottom leading us in, and we've got these towering sort of segments between the windows. But then, you know, this guy with his white shirt kind of stands out nicely. It would have been different if he had a grey shirt on, or, you know, something that was blended in with the background more. But he just pops just enough to get our eye over there. And of course, we're always going to be attracted to the human form. So
it
really works well. I love this.
Yeah, thank you.
So let's move on to the next one. And I guess this is one of your street portraits.
That's a street portrait. And that was also this past weekend in DC. And this was a pedicab, a Capitol Hill pedicab driver. And he was taking a break, and it was right next to the White House. And it was also, the sun was really low and coming behind him. Mm. And he had this beautiful smile.
Absolutely.
And I looked at him twice, and I'm like, oh, you got a beautiful smile. I really need to take a picture. and he took his, well, first he put his glasses back on. I said, oh, no. You have beautiful eyes too. So he smiled. His smile was even bigger. And he was completely into it. And he took his glasses off. And then I took two shots, one with his glasses on, one with his glasses off. And he's just having a good time. And who doesn't like a compliment? And I'm genuine. I mean, I would never photograph somebody because they look ugly or uninteresting. I photograph someone because there is something interesting, whether it's their smile or their cool hat or something. And I tell them, if I do a street portrait, and then I take my time, I try to do it right. And because I already have the permission, so you might as well, you know, slow down and do it right. Yeah. There, I didn't want to move him, you know, because he was so comfortable and enjoying her break. But it worked. I really like this picture because it was such a fun moment, and that's part of the experience.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, that the first thing, that big, beautiful smile is just, that's crazy good. I noticed that you've got nice catch lights in the eyes as well. Is that, did you put something up, or is that natural?
No. Yeah? I'm such a minimalist, Martin.
Yeah.
I don't bring reflectors with me. No, I think that was actually a reflection from the street, you know, the sun hitting the pavement and then reflecting back in his eyes. I saw that too, and I was surprised because he's so backlit. And I didn't think I would have a catch light, but it worked. And I think it was the sunlight bouncing on the pavement.
Nice. It's very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't use flash or anything.
Well, I mean, it shows your images are very natural. It's I was kind of expecting you to say that it was a reflection of something, so it was one of those devil's advocate sort of questions. But yeah, it's great. I think this is one of my. They're all beautiful, but this is one of my favorites from the whole set.
It's fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
It just makes you happy.
Yeah, it does.
You look at it and it makes you smile.
Yeah.
And it makes you happy. Yeah.
Yeah. Smiles are contagious. You see one, you just, it's like I often walk down and I'll see my wife watching the TV. She's got this huge smile on her face. And it's just, you know, she might not even be really that happy in a, you know, that present time, but she's watching something where someone's smiling and she's just smiling back. It's quite funny how people do that.
Yeah. It's contagious.
Yeah. Okay, so the next one, we have a little boy trying to feed a pigeon, I see. So,
yes. And that was,
tell us about this.
That was on Dam Square in Amsterdam last summer. And that's a touchy thing, photographing kids. And that's probably the first question my workshop participants asked me. How do you approach that? How do you photograph kids? And I said, just use your best judgment. If a parent is there, And you can ask permission, do it. Mm. As a parent myself, I find that so important. And you don't have to go to them and ask permission. You just show your camera and nod, and they'll nod back. It doesn't have to be a written permission. You know, you're not doing anything wrong. You're in a public place.
Yeah.
You're not photographing somebody in a vulnerable situation or in an embarrassing situation. And I usually stress that out to my students. Those are the do's and don'ts. And not everybody thinks that way, but I never photograph somebody in an embarrassing situation. I don't get any satisfaction doing that. And I'm not a photojournalist, so I don't photograph people in distress or anything. I like happy moments. I mean, they can be sad, but not people crying their eyes out because something terrible just happened to them. I just don't do that. So as long as you're respectful. And so I tell people, ask permission if you see a parent nearby. And usually if there's a child that young, you would. Actually, strangely enough, there was no one around that I could. There were several people sitting on benches. So the parent was there. I couldn't figure out who it was. And I was just kind of, I was on my knees right in front of him. I was shooting this with a 50. And I figured, well, if they have a problem with it, they will let me know. And then I will stop. And they didn't. I took quite a few frames because I really wanted to get the pigeon in the frame. And there were so many people in the background. And then I have those lovers in the background, but they don't distract too much. I ended up doing a square crop because they were more distractions. So that's just the only reason why I did a square crop on this one. I wanted to get the kid in the right position. So I took my time, but he was completely oblivious to, I mean, he didn't know, I think he knew I was there, but he was so intent on feeding that pigeon that he completely ignored me. So it was a candid moment. And I think it's a sweet moment.
Yeah, it is for sure. And so there's, you know, obviously there's some pretty weird people around, and that kind of spoils it, I guess, because I think for, you know, I'll throw it over to you. Do you think that it's easier for women to take photos of kids than guys?
Possibly. Yes, I think it might be a little easier, especially a mother won't feel as threatened by another woman probably taking a photograph of their child, but a smile goes a long way. And if you explain why you're doing this and you're respectful, I was very surprised. We did a lot of street photography in San Diego with my workshop participants a couple of weeks ago, and everybody got such wonderful photographs of children in candid situations, whether they were the women participant or the men participants, and all were so respectful and got permission and engaged the parents into a conversation after the fact. Sometimes we exchange cards. I mean, I'm more than happy to send them a print of their child if I have a good image. That's the least I can do if I'm happy with the result. So if there is an interaction, people usually don't feel threatened, whether it's a woman or a man photographer. But it's different in every culture. Like the French are a lot more private than the Americans, so it's more difficult to photograph French children than it is to photograph American children. And every state is different too. It was very easy in Southern California. It's a little more difficult in the Midwest. So cultures are so different.
Yeah. Oh, that's good to know. It's certainly something that I know, you know, the smile definitely goes a long way. And it's, if you can disarm people pretty quickly with a smile, and as long as it's genuine. I mean, if you stand there grinning at someone, they're probably going to be just as worried as they were before you smiled. But it goes a long way, I guess. And so I generally, with what little street photography I do, I often find, you've mentioned it a couple of times, that you look at someone, sort of let them see the camera, smile, and sort of, and you can ask permission just with your eyes and, you know, and that smile. So,
and when people don't like it, they will let you know. There is no mistake.
Right.
You'll get the message right away. And even if you know, people ask you to delete, it's not a big deal. Even if you're in your rights, you're in a public place, but somebody is uncomfortable with you having taken a picture of them or their child, just delete. It's really not that big of a deal. And I think it's the right thing to do, but that's how I feel. Not everybody feels this way, but, it's just the respectful thing to do.
Yeah. Well, I'm all for, you know, keeping the peace and being respectful. I think you build a lot on a bit of respect. So,
Oh, and it has to be a good experience for both parties.
Yeah.
You want everybody to be happy.
Well, so. you wouldn't be happy with your photos knowing that you're using it when the person really didn't want you to do it. So
exactly.
Yeah. Okay, good stuff. Let's move on to the next one. A gentleman walking along, another square crop as well, and I do like the square crop.
Yes, I do too. Here was a very busy, it's in Paris, very busy place. So it's hard to isolate a subject. Mm. And this gentleman looks, if you're a Francophile or you're French, you will know Jacques Tati. And he reminds me of those movies with Jacques Tati as an actor. To me, it was a striking resemblance how he walks, leaning forward, the trench coat, the cane. Mm. I think Jacques Tati had an umbrella, but the hat. And when I saw him, I thought, oh, that's a shot. And I just like the gesture, just the way he's moving. There is movement in the image, and I look for that.
It's great. What are those things on the ground? Are they like to stop people riding bikes or what?
You know, it's actually like a, it's called Les Colonnes de Buren in Paris. It's in the Palais Royal, the Royal Palace, which is near Le Louvre. Mm. And it's just a park and kids love playing on those. They're different heights and they cover a really large area. It's a wonderful place for photography. Mm. Because kids play on those or they ride their scooters around them and jump from one to the other. Mm. It's just a really fun gathering place in Paris, and it's a fun place to do street photography. I usually bring my students there on the first or second day because it's busy and a lot of people take pictures, so they won't feel so self-conscious and they'll be more comfortable taking their first steps into street photography in a busy place.
Yeah, that's great. I think they add a lovely graphic element. I don't think this photo would be quite the same without those scattered around on the floor.
Yeah, it's a fun place. Yeah. I highly recommend it.
Yeah. So I also like, you talked about the movement. There's the guy on the right just entering the frame. There's the girl on the left side with her, in full stride. You can tell that it's not a busy shot, but you can tell that there's lots of movement, like you say. So it works really well. I love it.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it worked well in a square crop. And that's when you do the crop, you have to watch those elements that are really close to the frame. You don't want to cut something that could be interesting and add to the image. So, I don't spend tons of time thinking about all that. But
yeah, well, you've mentioned that a couple of times that you don't spend a lot of time. And that's, I don't either. If something takes me more than a few seconds to sort out, then I generally just move to the next image. But what do you use to do your, you said you worked in Lightroom. Do you do your black and whites in Lightroom or do you do that in a plugin or something?
No, actually I do them in Lightroom, and I know there are some great plugins such as Nick Software, and I will try their Silver Effects Pro. Mm. There's a lot of really edgy black and white out there, and I'm not quite sold on it. I mean, I like it, where you really see they work well on some subjects. Like it really shows the age of an elderly person and, you see the every wrinkle on their face and they look great. It's just a little too edgy for me. Mm. So I'd like to find a balance. I like my black and whites to be higher contrast, not flat.
Yeah.
So I do work with the contrast quite a bit. And but I don't like it to be too edgy that it looks almost fake. Mm. And so I will try Silver Effects Pro because I see a lot of really good work coming out of that. Mm. I just never have enough time.
I think it suits your style of photography very well. You don't, like you say, a little bit contrasty, but not too much. Mm-hmm. And, with me, with my, I rarely do black and whites of wildlife, but for the, the landscapes that I do, I love a black and white, especially in long exposures. And I like to push the contrast really work the structure so that it's quite a punchy image. But I think with your work here, like you say, not overdoing it really suits it. It seems almost Cartier-Bresson, the way you were, I guess one of your the people that I would imagine that you look up to as a street photographer, but it's the, you know, he obviously it was years ago and he didn't have Lightroom and stuff like that to work with. But I think that the style, the feel of the images is actually quite similar. You know, they're clean, they're not overdone, and I really like the style.
It works for me, and I think it suits me, and it takes just seconds, and you know, that's my goal. Really, I don't like to spend a whole lot of time in front of the computer. Yeah. So I don't ever use a preset. I tweak every image, but it takes me seriously 5 seconds per image. Mm. I never spend much more than that. If it takes much more than that, then the image is probably not good enough. And I could spend up to a minute, but really that's it. Mm. I think it's all about what's in the image. Mm. Anyways, you can't polish a bad image.
Well,
really,
you know what David Duchovny says, that you can't polish. I don't know if you've ever read this.
You can't polish a turd.
That's the one.
I don't think it's from him. I think it was a quote from another photographer, but yeah. I remember reading that in one of his books and I love it. I didn't know if I could say that on the air, but no, I did.
Well, I also saw in an email recently, Joshua Holcock, great photographer from Australia. He built on that and saying, no, but you can roll it in glitter. So...
That's so right.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if that's what we want to be doing. But I thought that was a good retort.
That's good. Yeah.
Okay, so let's move on to the next one, and I've got a couple of questions about this one as well. It's an elderly gentleman sitting in a chair, and well, let's tell us a little bit about the image.
That's in Paris at the Luxembourg Garden, and which is just down the street from the hotel where my workshop participants stay at. So we spend a lot of time in the Luxembourg Garden, which is a wonderful place to shoot. And it's a typical timeless image. When I see somebody like that sit, they have character, but that's not always enough. Mm. And so there I was, I don't remember, I may have been shooting with my other favorite lens is actually the 24-70. If I don't know if I'm going to be needing a wide angle for architecture, that's usually the one I take, which works well for street also. It's just heavier to carry all day. Mm. And so there I was really close, but I wanted more in the frame. And they were those, I think it's a pigeon or some bird.
Yeah.
And he was looking at it. And I thought, if I could get him looking at the pigeon and the pigeon coming in, you know, just facing him, that would work. And it worked without having tourists around and too much distraction and just the statue in the back and you know, having the fence that's wall not going across his head. So you have to think of a lot of things really, really quickly.
Yeah.
You know, the distracting element, you know, his head could be right where that flower pot is, and then it would look like he has this huge afro. I mean, there could be so many things could go wrong.
Yeah.
So you really have to scan very quickly. And I think you learn to do that with experience. Like, okay, because you may only get one or two shots. So
I think that obviously the angle here makes it, you've got, like you said, not only the angle from a sort of right to left perspective, but you got it at just the height necessary so that you can actually see that the top of that wall along the other side of the courtyard. And so that paints the picture of, you know, he's sitting there along this courtyard. We can see that from that, just that having that little bit of the wall in the distance. But the other thing that I wanted to ask here is, if I'd shot this image, I would have probably tried to look up more and show us more of the upper side of the screen and leave out that foreground. But with it, you know, with the way you've done this, that foreground is really appealing. It's like it gives us there's nothing down there, and this is me sort of fighting with myself. I want to be able to compose this so that I get rid of the foreground. It's like portraits with people's heads in the very center when you've got loads of room above their heads, and you think, well, why? And the logical side of me wants to say, why have so much foreground? But the aesthetic here is saying that it just works so well. Is there some sort of a law, not a law, but a, you know, a rule or guideline with street photography about including foregrounds?
I don't think so. And I don't think there really is any rule in street photography. I shoot low. Mm. I mean, I was probably, again, on my knees. Mm. I'm going to have really bad knees as I get older. but I was really low. And I like having that blurred foreground. Mm. To me, it leads the eye to the subject. It's not distracting. I like that. I like negative space. I like minimalist photography. When I do landscape, I only shoot, you know, trees in the snow and the fog. And I like the minimalist look. And I think that might be why I like to add some foreground and some negative space, even in the street photography. I rarely shoot more than one or two people at a time. I don't like busy. I like simple. And maybe adding the foreground made it a little more simple and and added that negative space. I don't think I put a lot of thought process into it. That's just how I feel it and how I shoot it. And it just worked. It just worked for me. Yeah. And some people could analyze this all day, but I didn't. I just shot it. Mm. I saw it and I shot it. And I don't overanalyze things a lot. But I can tell if it works or if it doesn't work. If I see it in post and something did not work, I will see it right away and I will trash it, or I'll try to fix it and crop it. I will know right away if it doesn't work. But I think it works.
Yeah, I agree totally. And it's like, you know, like you say, the negative space, it leads you into the image. And it's like the foreground in the shot with the little boy with the pigeon. There's a lot of foreground there, but it works well. And I think it's, I really like it. It's not the way I would have initially thought of composing a shot like this, but it works beautifully. So I'll have to keep this in mind. More foreground in if I do street photography, more foreground. So okay, let's move on. We've got a couple more shots to go through. This next one, we've got the what? Tell us about this. It's a beautiful reflection.
That's the U.S. Capitol in Washington D.C. again this past weekend. I like to include people in my frames. And that's an example of people being secondary subjects. Obviously, here the main subject is the Capitol. And I always teach in my workshop that you should try to find a different way to shoot an iconic landmark than a straight-on picture of the U.S. Capitol in D.C. would be pretty boring. And I saw this reflection walking by this marble surface. So I only have the reflection of the Capitol. I don't have the Capitol in the background. I only have its reflection, which I think works well. But then I wanted to include the people in the background. They're very small, but they're there. And they add life to the picture. You know, a lot of photographers who do cityscapes and landscape, they don't want people in their picture. I do. I think the image would not be complete without them. They add life. They add movement. And although they're not the main subject, including people in your frame will definitely add life. To your picture.
Yeah. They certainly add scale. They add life. They're great supporting elements. It works really well. I like that one of them's a photographer as well.
Yes, a lot of those around.
I've got a lot of photos where, and to me, sometimes it's the photographer in the shot that, I mean, I often call them the photographer photographing, and it's just, you know, there's something about the, you know, there's this sort of kindred sort of spirit in us all that, you know, we want to photograph each other. There's one guy, a friend of mine here in Tokyo. And we've traveled together a number of times, and I've got hundreds of shots of this guy, and it's just, you know, it's just silly, and we rarely use them, but there's just something about a photographer in a scene.
It is fun.
Yeah, but these are great supporting actors. I see totally what you mean. And you do see some amazing landscapes where just adding a person way off in the distance makes them so much better. So it's, great stuff. So it was marble, and I thought it was probably was, but it's a very nice reflection.
Yeah, it is pretty clean, and the marble was at spots, but it worked, and it was I loved it. I don't even think I have a picture of the U.S. Capitol. I only have a couple reflections of it because I think they're more interesting. That's just thinking outside the postcard shots. And I talk a lot about that in my workshops. Like, you know, find a puddle or something to photograph the Eiffel Tower in.
Yeah.
Or somebody walking by with an umbrella and get their reflection.
Yeah.
There's so much better images than just shooting the landmarks straight on like everybody else does.
Yeah. It's great advice. I'll definitely be keeping it in mind. Okay, so the last one.
You're going to love that one. You like photographers.
Another photographer photographing. But you know, obviously here we've got the guy photographing, but then the lady walking out there, and these two very powerful, striking silhouettes, and then we've got the pyramid in that. That's a gallery or something, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the Louvre. Actually, that's the Museum of the Louvre, and the main entrance now is in that pyramid, which I love because there is contrasting architecture. It's a beautiful place to photograph with or without people. But actually I was walking by and I saw this. I love silhouettes, and silhouettes only work if the subject is easily recognizable. Here you can tell it's a photographer. People with umbrellas are good silhouettes, or people with bikes, or people holding hands. You have to know what they're doing or who they are. You know, people just standing there, it don't look like anything. You just have to have an element that will tell you what the silhouette is. Here it's obviously a photographer. So it was the only reason why I had time to take the shot was because he was actually waiting for the woman to leave the frame so he could take a perfect shot of the pyramid in that archway. I didn't really care about that part. I mean, the pyramid is not straight on. I didn't have time for that. It was either I get the shot or I don't get it. And at that point, that was the least of my worries, to get the pyramid and the arch centered perfectly. I wanted that woman in the frame because it adds movement and it worked well. Whereas he was actually there for more than he needed to and gave me that shot because he was waiting for that person to leave the frame. So it worked out to my advantage.
Yeah, very nice. Yeah, the old and the new, and then the people as the supporting actors. Mm-hmm. It's very nice. Very nice.
Now, silhouettes are fun to do. And they're fun to look for.
Outside there, was it looks a little bit misty. Is it raining or mist or?
Yeah, that was in January last year, and it was starting to rain. Yes.
Okay, that adds so much again, because if it was a beautiful clear day, there'd be a lot more contrast out there, and having that bit of the fact that. I think it was Jay Mazel said something about you never trust air that you can't see. I love that. You know, just being able to see that there's a little bit of something happening out there, either mist or rain or something. It just reduces the contrast and really enhances the silhouettes. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Great one. So, you know, not only congratulations on a beautiful body of work, but it's been a lot of fun walking through these with you, and I'm sure that the listeners are going to enjoy this as well. And I'd like to finish just by asking you to let us know where we can find you online. I'll put the links into the show notes, but where can people find you, Valerie?
Well, actually, my website, which is valeriejardinphotography.com, and that's all in one word, valeriejardinphotography.com. I'm going to be redoing my website next month because it's actually highlighting more my commercial work and not so much my workshops, and I'm kind of phasing out the commercial work now and pretty much focusing all my attention and teaching. So, but the address will remain the same. Yeah. So, there's a workshop page on my website. I'm very active on my Facebook page, which is Valerie Jardin Photography. And, I'm starting to get some traction on Google+. So I'm excited. Yeah. I must be on some list or something, because all of a sudden I get so many more people every day watching looking at my work and commenting. And so it's been actually kind of fun being on Google+, so I'm glad.
Well, that's great. And although we've got those nasty cryptic Google+ link, the profile links, I'll
just Google my name.
Yeah. Well, I'll put a link to your Google Plus and your Twitter and your Facebook.
Thank you.
All in the show notes, so that they'll all be at mbp.ac/364. So go take a look. Take a look at the, even if you listen to the Enhanced podcast, the images on the website are beautiful and big. So go over there, go to full screen with the browser and have a look through the images, because they really are beautiful. So thank you very much for your time today, Valerie. It's been a pleasure. I've had a lot of fun and I've learned some stuff about street photography that I'll be putting into practice as well.
Thank you. You'll have to come on my Paris workshop and I'll go to the snow monkeys with you.
That sounds like a plan.
We could probably learn from each other a lot.
Oh, I'm sure.
Since we shoot such different genres of photography, but it's all good. I photograph whatever moves me. I mean, I love doing street photography, but I love a beautiful landscape. And I think we shouldn't limit ourselves. We need to explore. And
absolutely.
And yeah, so it's great.
Yeah, good stuff. Okay, well, really, thanks so much for your time and all of your insight. It's been a blast, and I'm looking forward to hearing what people have to say about this episode.
Thank you. I hope they enjoy it.
Okay, so that was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed speaking with Valerie, and as I mentioned, all of the beautiful images that we spoke about are on the blog at mbp.ac/364, but they're also embedded in the Enhanced podcast if that's what you subscribe to. But really, they look so much better on the big screen. So go over to the blog and take a look if you haven't already. So really though, thanks very much for listening today. Remember that you can find me on Google Plus and Twitter, etc., and links to everything that I'm up to are on the top page at martinbaileyphotography.com. So do drop by and take a look. I'll be back next week with another episode, but in the meantime, you take care and have a great week, whatever you're doing. Bye-bye.